Don't you guys do a turn the page segment
Wednesday?
It's time to turn the page.
Turn the page Wednesday.
I don't know when I turn the page.
What we feel like is a great opportunity to turn the page.
We just haven't been able to like turn the page.
That's what you have to do. You got to turn the page.
I think now we all can move on.
Looking ahead to this week's opponent.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Because we need to know when to turn the page. There I go.
Are you ready?
Let's do it. It's Wednesday at 3 o'clock. We prepare you for the next Bears opponent and look at the division in a few minutes as well. The NFLPA's survey of all the players February of 2024 had the Commanders 32nd, dead last in almost every category. Other than strength coach, clubs, operations, facilities, ownership, belief in the front office, all of it dead last in the NFL. Ownership changed. Obviously, eventually they got a new quarterback, but the head coach changed. You know how I feel about Dan Quinn. Talked about it yesterday. Here's Dan Quinn from today talking about what he has done in flipping this culture over the last 6 months.
Yeah, I think we're making progress. I think you kind of talk first piece like a foundation is being built for that, but we're not there yet. There's another level to get to, and that's, you know, what I was referring to today about how do we get to the next spot. I had talked to the team about foundation of our brotherhood. There's another level. What about our physicality? There's another level. What about the communication at the line? There's another level. And so those are the things that you want to take the next steps to. I like it in the run game of what I've seen. I like it on the special team side of things. I felt it, you know, when at a line of scrimmage yesterday, and excuse me, in the last game, I really felt that. So it's about finishing. It's about toughness. And we're not where it's going to end up, but we're making strides on that. And that's what this time is for. Like, you don't wait. Like, go. Do it now. Like, there is no waiting. Like, you absolutely go for it again. I think what some of the guys are learning, and I hope they can take it with them forever, like, all of us here will be former Commanders one day. We just had alumni weekend, that you can work really, really hard, Chick, and also enjoy it. And, like, absolutely have other guys to go battle with and do it. And so, seeing that connection as teammates, come on, we'll go do it again. We'll go do it again. It's the extra stuff they do in the weight room, the extra meeting room, on the field practice. You see them just spending time together in the locker room when there's no meeting next. They just spending their day, you know, hanging out and doing stuff together. So that's an attitude together that you can work really hard, as hard as you possibly can. But when you have other people to go on the trip with you, it makes it that much more special.
That's Dan Quinn talking about his Commanders. They have the best point differential in the NFL at plus 66. Others above 60 are the Bills, the Steelers, the Lions, and the Vikings. They've won three out of their last four by 21 or more points. They have the fourth best quarterback rating as a team. You know Jaden Daniels has been great. What you don't maybe realize is how good Marcus Mariota was on Sunday. I know against Carolina, but he started the game 0-for-3. Then he hit 15 of his next 16, including 11 straight at one point. Ran a great two-minute drill before the half. Washington scored on six straight drives with Mariota as quarterback. He is still effective as a runner. He stays on doing the zone read, and Cliff Kingsbury has been continuing that, whether it's Jaden or not. Now, obviously, that opens things up for the running back. Brian Robinson's been very good, seventh in the NFL in rushing yards. Austin Eckler is there. Terry McLaurin is awesome. 35 catches, 10th among all wide receivers, a great dude and a leader. Luke McCaffrey, the rookie, is used often as a slot guy. Yes, that's Christian's little brother. Zach Ertz is slower than he used to be, but still scary as a tight end. Defensively, they're 16th in yards allowed, 20th as a run defense. They've had big leads a lot. Third worst in quarterback rating allowed, the Washington Commanders. You could pass on them. 107.4 on the season. The Panthers and the Jaguars are the only ones worse. The best quarterback rating against in the league is the Bears, by the way, 72.8. The Commanders have given up 12 touchdowns in the air. Jonathan Allen is out for the season. Their big defensive tackle, torn pec. They have been developing depth on the D-line because they've had a defensive end, Dorrance Armstrong, who's been out as well with a rib injury. Dante Fowler stepped up as a leader and stepped up in the game. A big interception return. He was with Quinn in Dallas. He filled in and balled out. And he said he was a running back in high school, by the way, and that's how the field flipped on his interception return. Thought about it that way. Also, Bobby Wagner is there, who played with and for Dan Quinn in Seattle.
Maybe my favorite defensive player of the last decade.
So they've got Dante Fowler as a leader and a difference maker in a short stint, Bobby Wagner as a leader at linebacker, and they got a young nickel corner, Mike Sanristil, the Michigan kid. That kid is awesome. He's fearless. Quinn loves him as a rare competitor and a leader. He's a rookie. He's 24. So that's very much a big-time player on that defense. You can pass on them, and I think the Bears will, but Commanders are good for lots of reasons.
Here's a couple of stats, that situational stats, that I think are interesting. Washington has converted 40 of 82 third downs, 9 of 9 fourth downs.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's aggressive and effective because Cliff Kingsbury has been on a heater, man. That dude, he can and will lean on the run game, like you were saying. He's creative with offensive personnel. He had an unbalanced offensive line last week, 3 times, and they got 26 yards on 3 running plays in that formation. So look for a bulked up and unbalanced offensive line sometimes. He's been running it really well.
The short passing game of Washington acts as an extension of their run game. Their offense will look like it goes side to side. What they've been able to accomplish with Jaden Daniels is taking vertical shots and hitting them. That's the scariest part of what they do offensively, where all of a sudden, like, oh, there's Terry McLaurin. He is downfield, and he's one of the best receivers in the game.
Yep.
And he's made a connection with Jaden Daniels. He seems to be helping to bring him along in a really good way. If you look at the catch chart of McLaurin, it does look a little horizontal, and he's been okay with that because he knows he's going to get a couple of shots a game to make a difference on a vertical, and he's connected on them.
But Jaden not being there as a running quarterback is a big deal, except that Mariota can
Marcus
do it too.
Marcus can move a little bit as well.
He can move a lot too. But what Mariota's been doing also is breaking the pocket when he doesn't need to sometimes and kind of, you know, tucking and running, which is something we know a little bit about in this town. So if you can contain him as a scrambler, you can probably control Mariota a hell of a lot better than he could Jaden Daniels.
So now that you've turned the page, am I allowed to talk about the NFC North?
Yeah, it's not like we've done that the last 2 days. The North is good, though.
Trying to figure out who the king in the North is going to be a thing for sure. Dan Campbell, this guy, his team in a lot of power rankings is number one in the NFL. He says that it's a big portion of that is because of what they've gotten from their guy, Jared Goff.
He's playing at a high level. Look, I was fortunate to be around Drew Brees as a player, but as a coach, you know, for a combination of 6 years. And when you're around that type of player, it's rare.
So is it his accuracy? Is that Brees like to you?
Yeah, I think it's the accuracy, man. I think it's the ability to process what the defense is doing to you and in a split second to be able to make an accurate throw, you know, and he's a winner, man. That's the bottom line. Your quarterback, the first description of a good quarterback is a guy who can win, and this guy's a winner. My first experience with Jared Goff was standing on the opposite sidelines for 3 years in a row and watching one of the top defenses I've ever been a part of as a coach or a player, which is New Orleans Saints, give that guy fits and watch him get hit and get up, make another accurate throw on the money, get hit, get up, make another accurate throw. NFC Championship game at the Superdome just freaking brings that team back and ends up, you know, defeating us. And I just saw the environment, the type of pressure that he was under, and just thinking, this guy won't break. And I would have swore he would have broke. I'm just like, this guy can't handle this. And I don't know many quarterbacks that could. And it was impressive, man. And that's the type of thing that sticks in your memory. And you don't forget those moments. And you're like, I don't know this guy, but I know enough sitting here watching on the sideline that this guy has found a way to win, and he just won't give up, and he just keeps coming back for more. And there's a quiet competitiveness about him that the man. You want that type of guy on your team.
Oy, a Drew Brees comp for Jared Goff.
Jared Goff, 22 of 25. Shane, what's the stat on him that he's had nine touchdowns
in the four-game win streak? It is 9 passing touchdowns and 15 incomplete passes.
Yep. 22 of 25, 280 yards, 2 touchdowns, passer rating of 140 as the Lions come back and beat the Vikings last week.
Now, they are calling him Breezes.
That is not.
City renamed Drew Orleans.
That is not true. At least not yet. Speaking of those Vikings, Kevin O'Connell and his team, they lost the game. They were one of the undefeateds going into the game against Detroit. Detroit comes back, handles their business. So Kevin O'Connell is trying to figure out how his group is going to deal with the adversity of losing a game.
You can go back and watch, which we will, even on a short week. We'll get right into it right now. But you're going to find a lot of little things, little tiny little details, techniques, fundamentals, calls that you'd want back, and got to find a way to improve. You can't just enjoy the wins and come back. We enjoy those more than anything, but truly, championship caliber teams are going to look inward. At the first sign of adversity, we were able to do that in game, come back and get the lead, but challenge everybody to look inward and see if we can do just a little bit more. Can we be a little bit cleaner across the board, because I have a ton of confidence in our team, our players, and how we work to continue to grow and get better. It's going to be a long season. Proud of the way our guys battled back. Didn't get it done in the end.
The Vikings are playing at the LA Rams this weekend, which had a lot of people wondering if there could possibly be a quarterback swap there. So Mike Florio discussed that.
We've already seen plenty of moves. The question becomes, will we see all the moves that are going to be made before we even get to the deadline? But this year is the first year that it comes the Tuesday after week 9. So there's still 2 more weekends of football. An injury to a key player on a contending team can change everything. It was last year that on October 29, Kirk Cousins tears the Achilles tendon. The Vikings scramble to find a quarterback. They traded for Josh Dobbs. This year, and I'm keeping an eye, look, if the Rams are entertaining the possibility of trading Super Bowl 56 MVP Cooper Kupp, why aren't they thinking about trading Matthew Stafford? And I think if a quarterback on a contending team gets injured this weekend, boom, there's a market for Stafford out of nowhere.
But you're really trying to move Matthew Stafford today.
He won a Super Bowl with Kevin O'Connell, Wes Phillips, and Chris O'Hara, 3 members of the Vikings coaching staff. He won a Super Bowl with them in 2021. It's a no-brainer to me if the Vikings are serious about trying to win a Super Bowl.
That's
Sam Darnold was
going to
get the tap on the shoulder at some point this year anyway for J.J. McCarthy. I'd rather get the tap on the shoulder for Matthew Stafford than J.J. McCarthy.
Man, that is Florio connecting the dots and trying to make it so. I will say this is a crazy-ass trade deadline in a league where it's getting nuttier and nuttier by the year. DeAndre Hopkins traded today. Nobody even bats an eye at that kind of thing anymore.
And it looks like he's going to play on Sunday against the Raiders.
Yeah, so a quarterback learning a whole new system, or at least a bunch of new terminology. It's not a new system because he's worked with O'Connell so closely, and he's Matthew Stafford. I can't imagine Sean McVay giving up on Stafford, because even if they traded other pieces, you have Stafford, you can flip and be a contender really quick next year.
Ideally, unless you want to start getting ready to find your new quarterback. The Packers came back and won their game last week. I don't know if you know that.
I am aware. Yeah, they held C.J. Stroud to 86 yards. The defense is good. It's a good team.
Their defense is really good. Mm-hmm. In fact, Matt LaFleur gave the game ball to their defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley.
Going into this, we did not want to allow C.J. to get comfortable. I think C.J. is a real guy in this league, and he's going to be for a really long time. And so just to apply that pressure on him, and Hafley does an outstanding job. And I think it's not just him. It's always everybody, right? Our whole defensive staff. But ultimately, somebody's got to put the plan together and call it. And I thought, just considering all the circumstances, a really explosive offense, you had 2 drives start on the 11-yard line, another drive start on like the 45-yard line. There's just a lot of short fields in there, and to be able to hold somebody to 22 points, considering all those circumstances, I thought he was deserving of the game ball. And then not to mention, and it was great, it was awesome by Eric Wilson. I thought he came in and did a really nice job. But that is a big loss when you lose your middle linebacker who calls the defense. You know, it takes Eric did a great job filling in that role, and it's even more remarkable considering he didn't even get any reps at the mic position really all week. To step in and do that, that's big time credit for Eric Wilson.
If you're hoping that the Packers are going to stumble after that big win last week against Houston, they play Jacksonville on Sunday. So there's that.
Really good defense, playing very well.
Coach, run game's going great.
Sure, yeah, it's good. It's good. Jeff Hafley quit his job as the head coach at Boston College, choosing instead to be a defensive coordinator in the NFL for his friend Matt LaFleur, because he didn't like the same stuff that probably Tony Bennett didn't like and Nick Saban didn't like. And you know,
some people just want to coach.
Some people just want to coach and don't want to recruit three times a year, as Dave Wannstedt has told us is the reality. And Hafley's a very good defensive coach and has them rolling. They were attacking in interesting and creative ways. I do acknowledge that the Packers defense is very good, and yet so is the Bears defense.
By the way, if you were wondering, well, maybe the Lions, after their big win over the Vikings, are going to stumble. They'll be hosting the Titans this weekend.
So that's a win.
And Minnesota, that's tomorrow night. Thursday night football versus the Rams. Quick turnaround for the Vikings for them to try to get themselves right. Sam Darnold, I thought, was pretty good, especially in the second half of that game on Sunday. Still missing a little something. It'll be an interesting watch with all the rumors between those two teams.
So you're saying the last place Bears
need a win this week.
They very likely have three divisional colleagues who are going to get wins.
Yeah.
Okay.
It would behoove them to win their game against Washington and the Commandos.
The page has been turned. The North has been dissected. Stacey Dales was great this morning, as she always is on Mully and Haw. She had a couple things. One, the Bears defense is second in terms of points off of turnovers in the NFL.
That's what you want.
That's what you need and what you want, and it's what I think is going to happen against Green Bay, because Jordan Love puts the ball into harm's way a few times a game, and I think the Bears are going to turn him over and get points off of him, and I believe that the Bears' offense and Caleb continue to grow and grow and grow. And by the way, first in that category is the Vikings, number one in points off of turnovers. And then she had this one. Since the Montez Sweat trade, the Bears have allowed the second fewest points in the NFL. And the Commanders are dead last. Since the Montez Sweat trade,
makes a lot of sense.
They have allowed the most points in the NFL.
They also got rid of Chase Young at the same time.
It's a good point.
Both edge rushers.
And they absolutely peed down their leg in the last 6 to 7 games of last year, which is a big, big factor. Yes, he's laughing at that stat.
Hey, there's a rumor that there's a new episode of That's Montez dropping tomorrow at our remote in the 5 o'clock hour.
Oh, my God.
So the writer's strike is over.
Yep.
Bye week.
Yep. So. Yeah, they just wrote it yesterday.
Wow.
We got a new episode dropping tomorrow during Wani's hit.
That's exciting.
That's breaking news
A live episode during our remote?
A promo for the episode for sure will hit tomorrow. During Wani's hit.
That's exciting.
Don't tell Wani. We're trying to make him surprised because he only watches broadcast TV.
We are not going to tell him.
I may have to mosey on over there just to see the look on Wani's face.
What the hell is this? Can't get anything done. Whoa. For real.
Is Wani in there?
See, it's pretty good.
Is that Wani? Where is he?
You know,
I can't find him.
It's about
there.
Rushing attempts, Shane. I just got to keep going with the rushing attempts, even if I don't gain yards.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I'm sorry. You don't do a good Montez. My Montez of choice is Chris Tannehill. That's the original playing the role of Montez. Yeah, that's him right there. So lifelike.
Makes a lot of sense the way he chose to do it.
Nice job on the North. Page has been turned. I feel cleaner, don't you?
I do. I'm glad that we were able to do that and get it done. And now we can just focus in on talking about those games. Of course, we say that knowing that the next segment of the show, we have to look at a dichotomy of sorts.
Seriously, man. Like, we had goodness yesterday. and then you saw badness this morning about this team.
It's very upsetting and frustrating for all involved, and we swear we're not trying to program White Sox stuff. It's just, it keeps coming up.
Well, I think the other part that we have to get to is just two hardcore baseball fans having a chance to hang around together on national TV. It was really nice to watch this morning.
Yes, that is something that we are going to share. When we come back, we're going to talk about the dichotomy of the White Sox in the last 24 hours. It's Spiegel and Holmes. We're going to discuss it next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Good vibes, baby.
Afternoons on The Score.
Oh, boy. He is the second most winningest manager in Major League Baseball history. A three-time World Series winning manager, former two-time Sox manager, now a special advisor to the team, and, of course, a Hall of Famer. Tony La Russa joins the show. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Pat.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, I watch Pat Tomasulo every morning. I love that newscast on Channel 9. And I'm like, oh, that's happening. And the first thing I thought was about this show. Yesterday, we did like crackling baseball conversation about the White Sox and why, if you're looking for a glimmer of hope, if you're a White Sox fan, you had actual stuff for the people.
Yeah,
the just share with the folks a little bit of what you heard about them.
That the Navy SEAL who decided to form a committee that Chris Getz was all about to make big changes throughout the organization has been making those changes. International scouting is well underway. And that yesterday there was word that the analytics department has been rebranded R&D to make it a little bit more digestible to some people who might have been on WGN Morning News. And they wanted Pat Tomasulo to be able to digest it better, which I thought was nice. So, and that the analytics department has been, you know, reorganized under new leadership and is very much helping other departments the way that they should. Instead of just being like in a room where the GM might go every once in a while, they're helping with scouting, they're helping with player acquisition, they're helping with baseball ops, they're available to help with the manager and all the coaches. Like, the way that it's supposed to happen is finally starting to happen, and that is good news inherently.
So you have that going on where it's like, okay, turn the Titanic around. It's a slow turn that you're going to have. Moving to the future in the analytics department, the research and development department, moving to the future. Good stuff. And then we go right back to the past.
There's the face.
We go right back to the baseball.
He was there.
He was doing something really good.
Yeah, he's got a foundation where they're putting like stray pets with veterans dealing with PTSD.
I think it's
a beautiful thing.
I think that is wonderful.
You just wish it was his full time focus.
I truly do. Truly do. Oh wait, here's Pat Tomasulo. Hi, Pat.
Hi. What's going on? Shane's calling me three times. I kept ignoring it because I didn't recognize the number. I'm like, oh, maybe this is important. Wasn't that important? But what can I do for you?
No, we were just talking about the dichotomy of the White Sox, because yesterday Spiegs found out that the analytics department is growing and they've rebranded it as research and development. So my feeling was
great. I love it.
Right. Yeah. It's a great thing. And that feels like the future. And then we saw your interview, and then that felt like the past again.
Did you think I was going to ask Tony La Russa his feelings about analytics? Is that what
I was hoping.
Did you think that would have elicited a thoughtful and lengthy reply?
Oh, it might have.
Did you get the sense, Pat, that Tony is running the franchise from your interaction this morning? Did you look deep in his soul and figure out how much he's in charge?
I want to be very nice about this. And I want to be very, very diplomatic about this and not insulting. Let me just say, I think there's a better chance of Tony La Russa running the Pentagon right now than the Chicago White Sox.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I get the feeling that I want to be nice. He's 80. You know what I mean?
60. Take 10 years off.
So he's qualified for the Pentagon then, right, Pat?
It felt like 80. It felt like, hey, I was talking to a nice 80-year-old fella.
Yeah.
I don't think he's pulling any strings.
I disagree with that, Pat. And the reason why is because of who he sits next to and who he passes post-its to.
Well, he's got the ear that he needs.
That's what I mean.
I know, but
I think Pat's right, but I also
But how
think,
often but how often does he even try to speak into that ear? Is the question. How actively is the speaking going on? He's got a lot on his plate with the good stuff he was doing this morning.
Right. He's working with dogs and veterans. What do you think he's got time to mess around with baseball?
I wish that were the case. Pat, as always, we love
you. You think that he's really got Jerry's ear and that he's pulling strings?
Oh yeah.
I think he has Jerry's ear. I don't know how many strings he's pulling anymore.
I think he played a huge role in hiring their current general manager.
Yeah, but now I think the general manager is being given a lot of leeway and he's doing some stuff. And,
right.
And he's also throwing, according to the general manager, he is also asking Tony La Russa for advice and to sit in on meetings and to listen to ideas about White Sox baseball. That's his own words.
Pat, if Tony was spinning plates this morning, you know, and you had Saber Dance playing in the background, how would that have gone? You think how many times could he have kept the plates still spinning?
Oh boy, one and a half times.
All right, it's
hard to imagine that as a guy who runs a baseball franchise.
Let's leave Pat alone. He's got to go to sleep. He's got a job.
I'm doing laundry right now. I'm here. I'm folding laundry for my wife on my anniversary, and this is how good of a person I am. I picked up the phone after three missed calls from Shane to talk to you two nudniks.
It was one, you sent it to voicemail, and then I texted you, it's me calling from work, and then you picked it up. It wasn't three missed calls.
I didn't check my text. Okay. It just kept ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing.
Shane, he only picked up the phone because he thought one of us was dead. That's the only reason he picked it up, because that's what happens when someone calls you three times.
Which one do you wish was dead out of the four of us? Lawrence, Speegs, me, and Tanny.
Oh, boy.
And throw Mitch in there as a fifth.
It depends on the day, buddy. I love you all. I love you all. Stop.
Well, look, I've had a good run, Pat. So if you need to say me, I'll take
that's
that for
true.
The team.
You're the oldest. We could eliminate you. Tribute to Cyrus would go on. They'd find somebody else.
Hey, wait a minute. So would the news, buddy. Hey, we had Potash on this show last week. We don't need you anymore.
Did you? What was he on for? Backstory?
Yes.
Yeah, he was telling us about the Jordan statue on Backstory.
He's unbelievable. Let me tell you about the Jordan statue on Backstory. Larry's the man. Larry's good.
Spiegel and Larry were at Emerson at the same time.
Yeah, I got scouting from a former teammate of Larry's on the basketball team. Said he was all hustle. It was all.
You were there. Wait. You were there at the same time as Larry?
I was. I'm much younger.
You were that old.
Oh, I'm much, much younger than Larry.
Are you, though?
I think he did his senior year four times, if memory serves.
Look at this.
He was a good player, though.
Mm. Yeah.
All right, Pat. Thank you. Do you fold the shirts in a C pattern and then fold them up from the bottom? Does your wife have a specific way? Because mine does.
She has. Oh, my God. She has a specific way for everything. Every towel, every bath towel, hand towel, kitchen towel, washcloth.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. They're all insane.
Yeah.
All of them.
Pat, we're really sorry for bothering you with our nonsense.
No, that's okay. Listen, I always have time for you guys. You know that almost all the time.
You're the best. Thank
but
you,
But now on his anniversary. Bye, Pat.
Later.
Pat also asked Tony La Russa about selling the team. If Jerry's going to sell, that's the year that he's
going to. Well, I think because, you know, the conversation was with Dave Stewart, one of the great pitchers with the Oakland A's, and he's trying to be part of an organization that probably acquires an expansion club, maybe in Nashville. So I think they were just talking baseball and the speculation. Jerry's White Sox guy, and he's going to see us get better. He really has gotten beat up, gotten a major blame. And the fact is, you hire people in the front office, major league manager, players to play the game, and he's at their mercy. I think he's one of the finest owners. He's done more for baseball, minor leagues, executives and players with the way he's been fair. Everybody loves working for him. Not Jerry's fault that we played like crap. And we're all bound and determined to improve it. In fact, I think you're going to see a major improvement next year.
Wow. Tony Cash, Rick Rubin doing a terrific job producing that
broadcast.
Felt like
Tony Bustosser, too.
Of all the players and everybody?
The people who were in charge of baseball operations over the last few years.
It's really, if you allow yourself to think about it, it's sad. It's sad. It's two old men allowing their own legacies to be tarnished because they're narcissistic. There's a vanity project going on for the owner. There's the belief that the Hall of Fame manager could still have done his job, which he really can't and shouldn't have been allowed to do. And then there's the two of them as the shared face of something that is just horrific. And they're letting other people do their jobs now for the most part, but they demand the feeling and appearance of being in charge. And when you really think about it, you can get sad.
The White Sox definitely need a new face. They really do. I look at what Poles has done from an energizing standpoint for the it's a whole thing. Why don't we continue to discuss it, because we didn't even pay off the tees.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most passionate White Sox advocates of all time in the history of Chicago media got a chance to talk to the commissioner.
We will share that with you next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I'm just saying, Lawrence, you were saying some stuff last week, if my memory is correct.
That's why Danny left.
Afternoons on The Score.
I need more than one thing for my creative outlet.
Yeah.
I need to be intellectually stimulated. And it's not that I'm not for my four-hour-a-day radio show.
I understand that.
Yeah, you do. I know you do.
I don't think that's a crazy thing for Danny to have said.
It was a shot at us.
No, it wasn't.
No.
It was
him talking about like some of the restrictions of doing a four-hour local radio talk show. I'm sure there were topics that Danny wanted to get into that he couldn't because it wouldn't make sense to do it on The Score. I understand where he's coming from.
I bet he doesn't get to do them now, though, either.
Well,
he really wanted to talk about the Cowboys when he was here, and we wouldn't let him. And now he can do it anytime he wants.
No, he really can.
That guy...
That
guy could do a political talk show. You're political or, like, news issues. Like, he was intellectually stimulated by a lot of things.
A lot of things.
You know?
Like baseball on the south side of Chicago. Our friend Danny Parkins hosts a show on... FX1. I'm sorry, Fox Sports. Wait.
FS1.
FS1.
I've put the two things together.
No, he's on Sons of Anarchy, the relaunch.
Yes.
He's one of the Mayans.
He now runs Sam Crow.
How's your old lady? My old lady's over here. I can't even ride this bike anymore. What is this, a Dyna or a Sportster? Give me the 883. The 1200's too big. Do you guys have any scooters, maybe? A Vespa?
FS1. Breakfast Ball, which you can... Apparently, Layla said, I didn't know this, they replay it at midnight.
Oh, that's cool.
That's when she watches Breakfast Ball.
That's cool. And Danny texted us yesterday in our old thread, different show, no E between D-I-F-F and R, as there is on the picture. But yeah, so he texted us in the thread and said, hey, I'm going to get Rob Manfred in the studio. And so we all kind of suggested some questions, as we always used to do, kick around stuff. So it was a lovely, lovely thought. And Tanny suggested the White Sox question. And this morning with Rob Manfred in the studio, Danny Parkins asked it.
So, Commissioner, I'm from Chicago. I'm a Chicagoan. There's reports that the White Sox might be going up for sale. There's talk of public funding and debates on the stadium. And next year will be the 125th season of the White Sox on the South Side. I'm wondering what assurances you can give to White Sox fans that no matter what happens with the stadium or a sale, that the White Sox will be in Chicago.
Look, Chicago is an anchor city for us. I think that the White Sox are in a difficult situation. I think the location of the stadium's tough, but, I have confidence that things are going to work out in Chicago, and we're going to continue to have two teams in Chicago.
Thank you.
That was great.
If I can just describe the body language before you respond, Lawrence, because I know it triggered you. The body language of Manfred, who has a long-standing relationship with Craig Carton, having to turn to this third host and acknowledge the Chicago question. He looked uncomfortable and begrudging, and as soon as he could possibly finish the question, he turned back towards the other hosts as willing and aggressively as he could.
Well, maybe he doesn't really know Danny yet, and I'm sure that he was like, well, this is just going to be a World Series like love fest because of it.
Yeah, I don't think it was about Danny as much as it was just about, that's a problematic issue. That good job by Danny to ask the question.
I
thought he phrased it extremely well and efficiently, and Manfred did not like having to talk about a real thing on what he thought was just going to be a tour of fun. World Series is coming.
Now I want to talk a little bit about the content of what it is that Manfred said. I know that there are plenty of people that look at the White Sox overall and say no one cares, and I get that. I do. For years on this radio station, people talk about 35th and Shields as if they're going into a war zone. I don't know if people have been to Bridgeport, especially lately. Bridgeport is awesome. It's a fun place to go. It has great restaurants all around it. The people are nice. The demographics of that neighborhood are also changing a lot. So you're seeing a lot of different types of people in that area. I hate hearing the commissioner of baseball talk about that ballpark in the way that we've heard a lot of callers over the years talk about, well, that location is tough.
I think the location of the stadium's tough, but.
No, it's not.
I think he's just trying to have Jerry Reinsdorf's back.
I understand that.
And when he says location is tough, he's trying to say, because he's trying to back them wanting the new stadium in the South Loop.
But we've got to stop just accepting that type of nonsense, Speaks. Like, we have to stop explaining it away as, well, he's just doing, like, it's BS.
Because he's bad at his job, and he's inelegant, and he's uncomfortable.
Do you know why the stadium, the location seems tough from people on the outside? Because Jerry Reinsdorf, unlike the majority of other owners in baseball, has refused to spend on development around the stadium.
He's committed to the parking.
He's committed to those giant ass parking lots. There's no sense of culture over there outside of Lot B and Cork and Gary at the Park and Turtles and Shinnick's and Bernice's and Maria's.
You have
to walk a few blocks, but if Jerry just put some damn money into building an attraction outside of the stadium, the area wouldn't seem so quote-unquote tough.
It's the cash cow.
Not.
It's the cash cow of the parking lots, which was very short-sighted.
It's stupid, dude.
To stay connected.
And there were plenty of offers for him to do stuff over there, and he didn't. It just always feels like a slap, you know, like it always feels like a slap at the South Side. And I hate that. Like, as someone who grew up on the South Side, someone who lives on the South Side currently, I hate it. That ballpark is super easy to get to. Multiple ways that you can get there.
Yeah, the train goes right there. The highway exit
Both
can be problematic.
Both trains go there. And
yeah,
if you want
right
to count the Metra, it's Amen. Right there.
And the connecting neighborhoods have improved in spite of Reinsdorf's activities. Like, I live in the South Loop, and it's pretty damn easy to get from South Loop to the ballpark and back. Bronzeville is stepping forward as a neighborhood in a lot of ways, you know?
The other thing is, if what bothers me too about it, and especially if you go with the idea that he's echoing how Reinsdorf feels, I applaud Jerry for what the 1901 project looks like it's going to do for the near west side of Chicago. You've had an opportunity to do similar things right there in the ballpark that birthed your franchise. And it wouldn't be as big of an investment because there's already some infrastructure over there. I just hate it. I hate that because Rob Manfred has said this on a national sports show, there will be people that will take that and run with it as if going to 35th and Shields is not a good time. It's a great time.
He's trying to make an apology for the troubles that the White Sox have had to have Jerry Reinsdorf's back. But what it instead comes off as is the same kind of crap he said about Oakland and John Fisher over the last 4 or 5 years, as that owner slowly let the team decay, let the ballpark decay, until enough people thought it either sensible or convenient to let them leave town.
And the other part is...
And that playbook is an awful playbook, and Manfred supported it because he just supports the owners doing whatever the hell they want to do.
I'm also really tired of us acting like the White Sox at this point are good. They continue to talk like they are a team that is in the playoffs every year. You are the worst team in baseball. And whenever they try to throw it and make it about the neighborhood or the fans of the team, it just rings hollow to me. It rings dog whistle-y to me, and I hate it.
I understand. I think that man is not good at his job. I'm going to go out and say I think Rob Manfred is not good at his job, and he proved it again this morning. Good job, Danny.
Danny did a nice job with that.
I agree.
Appreciate it. When we come back, Patrick Manley is going to talk Bears with us next here on The Score.